Blog Talk Radio.
We would like to welcome you to Africa on the Move, and it's your host, Lee Robinson. We will be bringing to you today a program dealing with perspectives on what's going on in the inner cities of in the United States among African people and people of color. We'll be discussing this matter today with our guest, former city council member of Richmond, Virginia, E. Marty Jewell, and we have with our sister, Katie Fulton, who is a resident of Denver, Colorado. We'll be speaking to them and getting their perspectives on what's going on in these inner cities. And at the end of the program, we will leave you information on how you may want to join in and participate in terms of some of their activities as relates to trying to move our people and all of humanity forward. Again, welcome to Africa on the Move. For those who are listening and like to call in later on, we'd like to tell you to dial in the number 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. And for those who like to review our programs on a weekly basis, you always can go to our archive by dialing in www.blogtalkradioafricaonthemove. So right now, we'd like to thank you for your patience, and we'll go to our guest, Mr. Imani Jewell, and our sister, Katie Fulton. We welcome you both to Africa on the Move. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Lee. Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here also.
Thank you, Ms. Fulton. Mr. Jewell, as a former policymaker for the City Council in Richmond, Virginia, at the present time, if you had to give us a current reality of what is going on in Richmond in particular and the cities in general in the U.S. in terms of the flight of African people and people of color, give me your synopsis of what is happening. What are some of the major issues that are confronting our people today based upon your experiences and based upon your present participation in this whole question of urban renewal?
Well, I can say first and foremost, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And I'm amazed to realize that much of what goes on here in Richmond is happening in cities all across the country. So it's not common to Richmond. We're in a fierce battle at the moment with regards to rezoning of Richmond Public Schools that is obviously driven by race and class consideration at the expense of African-American children. Closures, I understand the lawsuits have been filed for the same thing going on in Chicago, Philadelphia, D.C., and I imagine various other places. And we're going to fight them with everything we got. We're convinced that they have violated not only civil rights laws, but the State Department of Education regulations. They've violated their own rules of procedure. It's just a mess. Sadly, this is a 5-4 majority pulling this stuff, led by 3 African Americans. There's 7 blacks on the school board, only 2 whites, and yet we're having this throwback to Jim Crow days, where Richmond, Virginia, was the epicenter of massive resistance against school integration back in the 50s and 60s. So it's amazing that, and I don't know whether it has to do with this younger generation, all of those 5 in that majority are under 40 years old, and I'm afraid that generationally they just may be completely ignorant of the struggles we've had historically in this city and in the South generally. That, along with the fact that this cradle-to-prison pipeline is alive and well in Richmond, as I'm understanding is happening all over the country. And in each case, we have formed coalitions of existing groups, forming an umbrella to fight it with everything that we've got, both school resegregation and this cradle to prison pipeline. Economically, we are, as usual, marginalized. We've got a black mayor. We've got everybody in the city top positions virtually are black, yet our condition continues to worsen. And it has to do with our leadership failing us at every level. Our political leadership isn't talking to each other, and if they are, they ain't talking about us. Our clergy leadership, with rare exception, is missing in action. Our educational leadership is in shambles. Our business leadership is all splintered. We've got six black business organizations in Richmond, and they ain't talking to each other. And lastly, our civic leadership is melting into the earth. Y'all, we are in trouble. And the only bright spot is that people are beginning to wake up and realize that that this condition exists, and there is a growing number of organizations and coalitions, brand new, popping up here and there that suggests that we beginning to get it. That until the people get in it, you ain't gonna fix nothing. So that's the essence of what's going on here in Richmond.
Okay, Mr. Jewell, you have said a mouthful. I don't know where to begin. But I would like to preface my question with the statement that historically, I don't know if people are familiar with Richmond, Virginia, in terms of its historical role as being one of the trendsetters politically as it relates to the direction of this country. Richmond's one of the cities that is looked at, modeled after, and has great political and economic influence when it relates to making policies and how things will be governed in the future. So I think that all those things you have just described is very important. Let's talk about this just a little bit in terms of some of the issues you have raised as relates to what's going on in Richmond as a microcosm of the cities throughout the United States, and we do agree with that. In terms of political leadership, Mr. Jewell, can you give me your assessment or your analysis behind this assumption that historically we have always fought to be part of this political process with the understanding that more African political officials that we get to be part of these major parties and in these electoral positions like mayors and governors, it will transcend to empowerment of black people in general and particularly empowerment of black people economically. Could you maybe give me your take on why this has not occurred, given the fact we have more black officials or African officials elected today in these political parties and in these positions?
Well, first of all, let's at least stipulate. I'm a child of the 60s. I'm 67 years old. I went to Virginia Union University beginning in 64, and that was the protest movement, strongest era. And so I'm aware of these conditions. I'm aware of the fight and the struggle. And I'm also aware that only a handful of us actually got out on the street and did anything about it. The rest of them were virtually oblivious to what was going on. And those folks have come of age. They've gotten elected. Being good Negroes, and as a consequence, they serve their masters. Richmond has been the essence of a plantation as long as it's been Richmond. And so what we've got in our leadership are plantation folk who are adhering to everybody else's interests other than our own. It's sad, but it's true, and it's depressing, but it is what it is. Secondly, when you've got a majority black city, and incidentally, Richmond sent a delegation with its Chamber of Commerce and its government to Denver just last month or a month before last. They take these jaunts every year to some city in the country to see what's going on there that we might be able to bring here. And it never works. And so bottom line is black folk have never gotten anything of value out of the government system that we did not fight for. And to think that we should sit back as we've done in the last decade and a half and virtually done nothing suggests that we can't do that anymore. It's a lesson that we should learn that unless we remain engaged in our own government and hold our own elected officials accountable, be they black or white, then we will lose every time.
Mr. Jewell, I am aware of Richmond. I know there has been, like you said, too many cities are closing the schools. I'm aware of one particular elementary school, Clark Three Elementary School, has recently been voted to close down. And
yes.
I know that that particular elementary school was one of the better elementary schools in the city. They had
it is a high-performing,
and the kids are excellent academically.
It is a high-performing elementary school, rated number 9 out of 29 elementary schools, and is one of only 3 that passed this past year's enhanced math SOL scores, or standards of learning scores. It's an excellent school, but they would close it down. It's not an old building. We've got 100-year-old school buildings in this city. It just makes sense that you would close a 100-year-old building rather than a 40-year-old building. It's a little asinine, and it's all designed to appease the more racist and classist nature of white people who have an inherent fear of their children being a distinct minority in a sea of white people, of black people.
Because I wanted to raise this question of how could the so-called African leadership and those who argue about the importance of education allow such a school to close down when it concretely it has students that are doing excellent educationally, but yet the rewards they get is they close their schools down. How could that be? How could one allow that to what kind of message is it sent to the young folks? We constantly want to do the right thing.
Let me just say that I have always used as a measuring stick before I get involved with any young African-American's political ambition is to determine first if they are culturally sound. Too many of our folks simply are not culturally sound, and therefore they have no sense. They've got a tin ear to the struggles that black folks have had in this country, and the danger of doing something that could set us back. They simply have a tin ear, they're unconscious, and that is unacceptable. Particularly, you've got so many young folk who have grown up, who are under age 40, who have grown up in integrated schools, going off to UVA and Old Dominion University, overwhelmingly white universities. They have no cultural understanding about the black cause whatsoever. And so that's partly my generation's fault. But whatever is the case, that's what we're fighting today, and we're going to have to get a handle on it and do it quickly.
I agree with you, because also at the same time, when we talk about closing high schools, elementary schools down, a large segment of African institutions, the colleges are now being closed down. For example, right down from Richmond, St. Paul just got closed down, and they are now talking about there really no need to have African institutions, and it comes at a time when racism is rising and this whole plight of economic disparity is increasing. There are a host of issues and problems, Mr. Jewell.
Lee, you're just slightly younger than I am. I'm afraid what we're looking at is a generational problem on the one hand, but on the other, the civil rights movement is totally incomplete as a consequence of the fact that economics is the most neglected dimension of black life. We fought for civil rights. We fought for integration rights. We did not fight for economic rights, sadly. And that's where we are. Black folks got money. We got no wealth. And if we don't embark on the business of building community wealth in the black community right now, we can kiss it up for the next several generations, if not forever. And I define wealth, community wealth, as organized money, organized talent, and organized assets. Nobody's driving that bus for us. while white folks have the Chamber of Commerce, they got city government, state government, federal government, all pushing in one direction to enhance their economic lifeblood, we have nothing. We're in trouble.
Well, on that note, Mr. Jewell, we'd like to put you on pause for a while, and we're going to bring in our next guest, Ms. Katie Fulton. And as Mr. Jewell stated earlier, the Africans leadership from Richmond has taken a trip to Denver to find out how they can improve their city. Now, Ms. Fulton, for those Africans who may come out in your territory, Denver, Colorado, what is the general conditions of Africans out of Denver, Colorado? Give me an assessment. What's going on out there, Ms. Fulton? What can we learn from out there?
Yeah, we are dealing with multi-layered issues in Denver, Colorado. I think that you really and truly would have to have an assessment of the overall picture. There are many blacks in Colorado who are totally oblivious to the conditions and to the trouble that we are in. There are other blacks who are very well aware of the struggle, and as your last guest pointed out so eloquently, economics is one of the basic institutions of our society. And with that, you have family, education, religion, economics, and government. Those five basic institutions are in trouble in Colorado as related to black families. My son grew up here in Colorado, and our lives changed on April 4th, 2013, a few weeks ago. The policeman came into my home, plainclothes policeman, with guns drawn in my face, ordered me outside in my nightgown, confiscated my computers, cell phone, cameras, and anything else at their discretion, asking repeatedly for my son. My son was not home. I'm in a small apartment, two-bedroom apartment. They could see that he was not here. They continued to ask for him while confiscating anything at their discretion. After seizing his computers and telling me that they are now in a position to use the information on his computer to write up felony charges against him. This is a young man with no prior problems with law enforcement, never even had a ticket. But at this point, he's facing felony charges which can impact his life for several years. Therefore, we are trying to fight for his defense because he is worth saving. There are other people in the same situation who get caught up in this drama. By the way, the county that came in with a passkey, we have never lived in that county, Douglas County. Douglas County is 40 miles away from where I am. So there's a jurisdictional problem here as well as a digital error problem here. So what they're saying by their behavior is that, okay, this young black man graduated from high school in Colorado with honors, went on to go undergrad school, graduated successfully, didn't rape anybody, didn't kill anybody, didn't steal anything, was not a problem in the street. So we're going to reach into his life. We're going to go into his bedroom and get his computer, and we'll build charges against him using the computer. So they can use the computer against you and bring charges of felony against you based on your computer information, then where are we? Where are we?
That's very interesting in terms of what's going on with this NSA and this monitoring people information and personal lives. So
all kinds
of violations. All kinds of violations going on, and we are not connecting the dots because we don't communicate with each other. Now, as Brother Marty said earlier, and your case is a concrete case, there's a pipeline in which they are trying to incarcerate our kids and make them become free laborers. Or, in other words, we say enslave them. Now, Ms. Fulton, your case is a really interesting case. Can you describe the conditions in which they have your son operating right now?
Yes, my son has been before the judge, and he has indicated that he is not guilty of these charges which they intend to bring against him. Nevertheless, he's on bond. He's out on bond, but they gave him an ankle bracelet. Now, keep in mind, this young man has no prior law enforcement officials ever had a file anything against him, no priors. But they're treating him as if he is a criminal, terrorist, or a murderer.
So they give him an ankle bracelet, and 1:30 in the morning on June 4th, the pre-trial police officer had someone call him and said, "Where are you?" He says, "I'm home in bed." And they said, "Well, you need to get up because we're not getting a signal from your ankle bracelet." Ooh. He says, "Well, it seems to be all right with me. It was plugged in." He said, "Well, you need to walk around outside. You need to walk around outside or you have to drive into the courthouse and we'll check it." So he had the sense enough to wake me up and let me know he was about to walk outside. And I called the young lady, Danielle, back to say, "Did you just call my son? Just ask where he was." She said, "Yes." "We couldn't get a signal." I said, "Well, you understand you're putting him at risk to ask him to walk outside in Arapahoe County 2 o'clock in the morning?"
Ooh.
"He's the only black man walking around outside 2 o'clock in the morning. That puts him at risk. That's the way Trayvon Martin was."
Yes, I'm about to raise a possibility. Sound like they're creating a scenario where he could be victimized like Trayvon Martin.
Exactly.
And
he could be mistaken for something else. So I said, "Come on now." She says, "Well, you know, we got a signal now, so you can tell him to come on back inside." So I had to walk outside with my son just to ensure his safety and well-being.
Katie, have you contacted the ACLU out there?
I have written to the ACLU. The ACLU wrote me back and said they could not help.
All right.
Well, Katie, you
came into my house with a pass key. There's no doubt in my mind that they've been in before. There's no doubt in my mind that someone else had access to this computer. And if there's something foul on my computer, anyone, anywhere, anytime could have done it. Just as my son wasn't home the day they came in on me, he was not home many of days. But they endeavored to bring down felony charges against my son. So now we are looking for legal representation because I have to do all in my power to save this good young man. We have established with Wells Fargo Bank, Save Our Sons. If you care to help and would like to, please go to your local Wells Fargo Bank and make a check out for donation to Save Our Sons. And the last 4 digits on that account is 8104. And we will be able to use that fund to get legal help that someone will be able to take off the mask and see that this young man has been entrapped. And we are living in a digital era in which they are endeavoring to use his computer against him to ruin his future.
Katie,
man, let me
are
stop
there
you.
Any federal agents involved in his in arrest?
No, sir. There are no federal agents, to my knowledge, at this point. But there is a multi-layered jurisdictional issue. As I said before, these were Douglas County law enforcement officials that took the lead on this search and seizure. And they, after getting into my home, they called the good old boys in Arapahoe and said, "Okay, we're in now. She's outside in her nightgown. You can come in." So Arapahoe County
search,
came in without a search and said to me, "You can't come in here.
So
I'm being held at gunpoint while they're raiding my house. And my son is not home."
Did you say there was or was not a search warrant?
The second group did not have a search warrant. They were waiting for one to be delivered to them while they continued to search and seize at their discretion.
Good Lord.
Yes, sir, in Colorado.
There's
a lot of malice here.
One of the significant points we're doing the show today, if we want to use the show as a tool so we can wake up and inform other communities of what's going on. If they can do that to this young man in Denver, Colorado, who can say that they're not doing this to other young folks all around the world? And I do believe, Katie, that your organization, Save Our Sons, that you want to develop, not only funds will go in to help him, but also funds will be raised to help future youth who may be find themselves in this particular thing. So to our audience, we do encourage, if you can, one of the things you can do is to support the sister by way of one financially, because she's definitely going to need legal representation. And I understand they're charging you something like $400 a month just for a bracelet. You have to pay for that.
Yes.
So this is another
thing. Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, they have him doing a UA, and he's never touched drugs in his life. But they have him dropping a UA twice a month, $30 a drop, plus the ankle bracelet, $300 or $400 a month. Plus the bond. I mean, they set the bond initially at $50,000.
Whoa.
So the lessons we can learn
and
from
they
this
decided that,
about,
well, you know, maybe we can drop it a little bit. So they dropped it down low enough for me to at least bail him out. So I'm telling you today that we are struggling for our lives right under the nose of people in Colorado. They know us. Know that my son is an honor student, a college graduate, never hurt or harmed anyone, went to school, didn't rape any of the white girls in Boulder. He didn't hurt anybody, and he's lived a good life. He just passed the place exam in Colorado, which authorizes him as a teacher. So now he's going to have to file felony charges to see if, well, he can survive. And Douglas County is one of those counties in the 18th district that has, they do conviction for cash. They get cash for their convictions.
Whoa. Okay, Katie, what I would like for you to do quickly, Katie, give a phone number for people who may like to reach out to you to help you, where they can reach you, and also how can they donate money again to your cause. So then, Marty, I'll come to you. I want you to talk a little bit about some of the organizations you're talking about that you're working with to try to deal with some of these issues as it relates to our people. Go ahead, Katie. A phone number.
Please
and how
call
can
me
they,
at 720-499-5146, or you may leave a message at 720-221-8500. Please, if you can help, go to any Wells Fargo bank and make a donation to Save Our Sons. That is an account that's been set up to help with the legal defense for young men in this situation. The last four digits of that account number is 8104. Any help would be much appreciated because this is a living nightmare.
And what bank is this at?
Wells Fargo Bank. Any Wells Fargo bank will donation bond. Will take the donation funds from you on Save Our Sons.
Okay, Marty, can you talk about, you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the program, you have initiated some organization, coalition work that you're going to try to be able to deal with some of the issues. Talk a little bit about them.
Well, yeah. First of all, with regards to the school issue, segregation issue, we recently formed a Richmond Coalition for Quality Education that's growing, and we intend to take it citywide and make it a full-blown movement because this is idiocy on the hoof. But I also belong to a Virginia Leadership Roundtable that is comprised of about eight different organizations and certain individual ministers and activists in the city that includes the State Conference of the NAACP and the Richmond Education Association and a bunch of Virginia Baptist General Convention. Now, there's another group regarding this prison, this cradle-to-prison pipeline called the Virginia Alliance Against Mass Incarceration, which is fighting the very thing that Katie is talking about, these contrived arrests of African-Americans. Hell, you can go into general district court, criminal court here in the city, three courtrooms, Monday through Fridays, all of them packed. If you find more than five white defendants in a 51% black majority city, I'll eat your hat. And the implication is that only black people commit crimes, white folks don't. But we know that we are targeted. And as a consequence, we need to fight this targeting at all costs. There are several others. The Samuel DeWitt Proctor conference out of Chicago has been active here taking testimony of the very kinds of cases that Katie's talking about. I want to link up with Katie once we're off the air.
Yes, sir.
I need to pass on to her some of these resources.
Mr. Jewell, we've got 30 seconds quickly. Can you give us a phone number where they can reach you? People like to get back with you. Give us a phone number and then we have to close out. A phone number where you can be contacted.
I can be reached at 804-901-5015. 804-901-5015. My email address is marty@martyjewell2ls.com.
Okay, we'd like to thank everybody today. We'd like to let you know this is a bi-weekly program. We see you in 2 weeks at the same time, same station. You have been listening to Africa on the Move. We thank our guests, Marty Jewell and Ms. Katie Fulton, for their discussions on what's going on in the cities. Thank you.